Hi everyone, Sean Maloney here. Mushrooms seem to be everywhere these days, and in everything. Reishi, shiitake, cordyceps, lion's mane, turkey tail, chaga, and others are all finding their way into dietary supplements and other nutritional products. The closer you look at the kingdom of fungi, which is separate from plants, the more fascinating it seems to become. To better understand the complexities of medicinal mushrooms, where this market's headed, and where it needs to go, I talked with Bill Chaffee, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer for NAMEX, which supplies organic certified mushroom extracts. Bill's worked in the natural products community since 1994, including with Gaia Herbs and the Rick Scalzo Institute for Botanical Research at Sonoran University of Health Sciences. It's a really interesting discussion, so if you have questions or feedback, you can send us a note at nutraceuticals@rodmanmedia.com. So consumer interest in mushrooms has really exploded in the last few years or so. You see them in everything from traditional supplement capsules, all different sorts of food and beverage formulations, restaurant menus. What's your sense of why this market seems to have gotten so hot so quickly?
I'd have to say part of it is interest in psychedelic mushrooms, a renaissance in the properties of entheogens or psychedelics, whatever you want to refer to them as. But I think the public's interest also, oddly enough, in cannabis and regulatory reforms with cannabis, where you have a plant that has medicinal properties that's sort of been out of the hands of the public and at least outside of a black market that's now available. And so I think people are realizing that the natural world offers many benefits. And so, in a real general sense, I think it's through that introduction through, those regulatory reforms. And, since being in the sort of natural products world my entire working career, I'm a little, I have blinders on sometimes. And I realize that there's a huge percentage of the population that don't even know that you could use plants medicinally or to benefit your health in certain ways. So that awareness, I think, is coming with greater awareness, greater ability of information. And along with that information that's more available also is the scrutiny of what is good information and what is not. So
now in the supplement space, oftentimes I feel like when an emerging category really starts to take off, a couple of things can happen. One is confusion about terminology and language we use within industry, but also to communicate with consumers. And the other is potential for adulteration or low quality products, even safety concerns. So I'd appreciate your help in understanding some basic terms, maybe some basic biology here. First, what are the defining characteristics of a mushroom? Understanding they live in the kingdom of fungi, what makes a mushroom a mushroom?
Yeah, interesting. And so since most of our language in regulatory is based on plants, it is a separate kingdom of fungi. And so just the basics of a mushroom, it's what you see, the above ground portion and the classic shape of a mushroom cap. And so that is actually referred to as a mushroom, botanically classified in a phylum called Basidiomycota. And they're commonly called Basidiomycetes. Cordyceps, which is a very popular mushroom right now, species, they're in a separate phylum called Ascomycota or Ascomycetes, and these refer to the specific and unique bearing structures produced by each group. So the basic gills that are on the underside of like a shiitake mushroom would be your Basidiomycetes. And then polypores, which are hard mushrooms like reishi mushroom, also produce those spores from underneath, but they're coming from pores as opposed to gills. So strictly speaking though, the mushroom is the above ground portion of a fungal organism. And then what you don't see of that fungal organism is the mycelium. And the mycelium is, it's produced from a spore, a spore print. It could be produced from a piece of mushroom itself that could be cultured to grow out this network of hyphae. And these are fine thread-like filaments that they grow within and around the food structure. If it's wood or a tree that they're growing in, they will start to digest that food source. And the nutrient matter that these digest are generally organic matter, woody debris, dead plants, animals in the case of cordyceps or insects at least, leaves, soils, grasses. So the mycelium secretes enzymes, and the enzymes break down the organic materials into smaller sort of water soluble units that can be absorbed into the cell walls of the mycelium for growth. And that absorption of nutrients will allow the network to grow, spread in all kinds of different directions throughout the whole structure of whatever it's devouring, and form the vegetative body of the fungus. And so now we come to a mushroom. So when the conditions are right and suitable, that mycelial network that's a fine filament of threads will come together to produce a mushroom. And we also call this a fruit body or a fruiting body. But this is the structure that will produce the spores, right? So, it is actually made up of the mycelium material, but it starts to form together into a primordia, and then into a button, and then so forth into a forming mushroom. And it happens pretty quickly. You can see, I love the time-lapse videos that are available of all of these. So some mushrooms like woody conchs or cankers like chaga, actually not a mushroom. It's the manifestation of an infection of Inodotus obliquus fungus in a tree. So it's kind of like a hardened mass or canker that can last for years as a sort of bracket-like structure on a tree. And we've seen these in the woods before. People hiking quite a time for time on trails, can people leave them there? Those will last for years on a tree. So a couple really important terms, the mushroom, the mycelium, the spores that we covered, the primordia, which are it's a tiny aggregation of that fine filament-like thread that comes together and then will start to form itself into a mushroom.
I was gonna ask, are there other parts or terms associated with mushrooms that warrant attention or clarification? I want to also get into substrates too.
Yes, because when you're selling a mushroom product, mushrooms themselves have been what humans have consumed for foods for centuries. We haven't really had examples of any. You know, there's definitely examples in the animal and insect world of consuming mycelium, and very good ones actually. But for humans, nobody ever really dug up mycelium from a log and consumed it. So we've consumed the mushrooms. And this is kind of what's been studied, and but there's a lot of great research happening with mycelium. And I think the fact is that it's not really about whether it's a mycelium product or a mushroom product. It's the fact that when these mycelium products are grown, oftentimes they are grown on a solid grain substrate like oats or rice or some other grain that the mycelium will digest. Now, it's important to note that the process of growing commercial mushrooms for consumption, like a white button, agaricus mushroom, does not happen on grain, simply doesn't. It happens on compost and straw, other materials. So this process of using grain is actually what is a sort of like a seed for mushroom growers, and it's called grain spawn. And so this process, by which commercial mushroom growers can inoculate a grain and grow out a bunch of mycelium that they're going to then take and introduce into another growing medium to produce a bunch of mycelium and then mushrooms. That can be done, but typically no, it's done with a pure strain inoculation of their substrate. And so the thing is, when you're consuming mycelium that's grown on a solid substrate, it's impossible to separate that mycelium from the actual substrate. And the mycelium doesn't digest completely the substrate. So you end up with a majority of the product being the grain that the mycelium was grown on. And so this is kind of indicated in some of the testing that can be done. A simple starch test will tell you this. Mushrooms do not contain starch. So your simple science class experiment of treating a potato with some iodine to see if it would stain dark purple, that indicates the presence of starch. Plants metabolized starches. Mushrooms metabolize carbohydrates as glycogen, the same way humans store carbohydrates in cells. So it's very interesting just to see that those are basically in the US market anyway, the two types of products as raw material ingredients that are available are mushroom extracts and then dried mycelium on grain, which is not extracted. It's just grown on the grain, dried and served as a powder. And so I think that's the difference. It's not really the mycelium. Mycelium is absolutely necessary and one of the greatest regenerators of material in the natural world. It's really the fact that the grain is oftentimes, I think, not accounted for well.
So from a regulatory and labeling standpoint, should myceliated grain be distinguished from, you know, a mushroom extract fruiting body? Are they different products?
Yeah, well, I think the labeling is exactly that. And so what we've seen now in terms of the marketplace is brands are moving that myceliated grain biomass out of the other ingredients section up into the main section of the supplements facts panel. And so that indicates that they are well aware that the grain substrate is a part. And I think there's more research that needs to be done. And I'd love to see more quantification of how that grain has been transformed into something different. And so I think regulatory wise, if you look at new dietary ingredient notifications that have been either accepted or rejected, there's one for Ganoderma, pure mycelium, that was rejected by FDA because it did not match the qualifications. And I think of a mushroom that is something that has been consumed for some time. So in the products that are grown on grain, mycelium grown on grain in Europe are classified as novel foods. So at least a few different European regulatory agencies reviewing products for import have declared that you would have to file paperwork showing the safety of this, since it cannot be safely compared to its same mushroom counterpart that's been eaten for centuries.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, yeah. It is there, the like with anything else in the business, there are good actors and bad actors. And so, you know, it's a vast marketplace, direct to consumer, especially now with the rise in the interest of that marketplace. It's very difficult to police. We've had recent issues of, you know, falsely labeled and misbranded products that were sold through direct to consumer channels that weren't properly policed and ended up getting policed out of the marketplace. But those were products that were masquerading as the brands, which absolutely were not. And that is something that every marketplace needs to be aware of.
NAMEX, which stands for North American Medicinal Mushroom Extracts, has been growing mushrooms for more than 45 years. The founder, Jeff Chilton, has been studying them even longer than that. NAMEX extracts are made from certified organic mushrooms grown naturally on substrate materials native to each particular mushroom. Can you explain your cultivation and processing methods and how this compares to what else is available on the market?
It is quite an involved process. All of it happens in China. And the owner of Namex, Jeff Chilton, has a very long history. In fact, was instrumental in getting the first organic certifications in China for growing and processing of medicinal mushrooms. So to do it on a scale where you're able to produce multiple tons of extract regularly in a consistent way that meet the federal requirements for import, on that scale, it absolutely has to be done in China. They are the world's largest producer of mushrooms. We have a growing market for culinary mushrooms in the U.S. and a long-established market as well. But even if you took all of those growers combined, it would be very difficult to keep up with the tonnage of raw, dried, medicinal specialty mushrooms that we need to process. China and the processing of the mushrooms, that's a subject that we address regularly, that people have concerns. I think these are all going through a quality process that all dietary supplements should really go through of validated certificates of analysis that meet the requirements for safety. And so I think, the mushrooms are grown on, as you said, natural wood substrates. This is important for several reasons. That's because these mushrooms are native mostly to wood, and there's a lot of wood available. It's they're logs or wood chip substrates that come from the forests around the area from either logging or the growth of certain types of trees specifically for that purpose. But the logs are all inoculated with the certain strain of mushroom grown out and in natural conditions in sort of like a shade house with plenty of available sunlight. It's people think mushrooms grow in the dark, but actually they do need some sunlight to trigger the fruiting episodes and the right environmental conditions. So harvest time would be around the late summer, early fall, right? So they would start growing these out. And then this is a fact that all mushrooms you've ever eaten have been handpicked. They all fruit out at different times, and they will continue to come out of their log substrates during that season. So they have to be harvested by humans by hand. And so they're harvested, and then they're cleaned. The bottom of the mushroom is cleaned off. They're sun-dried, and then they are taken for storage, and then they are extracted, milled into a powder or a coarse ground to be extracted with hot water or a combination of hot water and ethanol. And then our extracts are simply from there spray dried into a powder without the any kind of added carrier or filler. So we're just grinding up the mushrooms into a slurry, basically cooking it for 3 hours and then spray drying. And so that's the basic process to make that extract. And I think that I can't really speak to what others are doing. I mean, I see things on social media, but haven't been to any of those facilities. So I really can't speak to that. But what I do see from specifications in the marketplace are mushroom extracts that are around a 10-to-1 ratio, and then also have about a 20% carrier to adjust for certain aspects of the extract. And that's fairly common with botanical extracts to use a carrier. So it's not something that indicates low quality. It just means you have to account for the fact that there's something other than the mushroom extract there. So
now, you mentioned quality control standards sort of generally for the supplement marketplace. Can you speak a little more to those in terms of testing protocols that Namex has in place?
Yeah, so in addition to the standard heavy metals, micros, things like this that you would do for your quality testing, pesticides as well, even in an organic system, pesticides need to be tested for. We have drift, things to account for. We test for genetic modifications through DNA testing, and are members of organizations that keep track of those things. I think that's very important. The basic testing protocol that NAMEX looks at with medicinal mushrooms is to look at the alpha-glucan and beta-glucan content, which these are specific types of polysaccharides that have, they do have biological activity. For us, they indicate a level of consistency that can be tracked across species. Certain species we've found will have a range of these beta-glucans, and it's sort of an indicator for us of how well the grower did with that batch and how much, you know, that it stays true to the specific strain of mushroom. And so in addition to beta-glucan would be the active part of the glucan fraction, and the alpha-glucans would indicate any levels of starch. We have one mushroom, cordyceps, that's grown on brown rice. That's the only mushroom species that we don't grow on a wood substrate. And that's because it won't grow on a wood substrate. Does do quite well on rice. And that could have some starch content in it, which is where we would use a less than 5% alpha-glucan or less than 5% of that starch. It's not a direct correlation, but the alpha-glucan content can tell us whether there was too much of the substrate harvested with the mushroom, just because as we sell mushrooms, we want it to be pure mushroom material. So, and then the other things, ergosterol, which is a precursor sort of to vitamin D. Ergosterol is a fungal indicator. It's kind of what the grain industry has used in quality testing to see if a huge batch of grain is contaminated with any kind of fungus, because all fungus will produce ergosterol. Another that we test for is ergothionine, and this is a nutrient that's up and coming. Some nutritionists and doctors consider that this could essentially be an essential nutrient. There's a specific transport mechanism for ergothionine so that we know we must obtain it from an outside source, and our bodies have a need to store it for some reason. It's found in other foods, really high in mushrooms, and a really strong correlation between those ergothionine levels and soils that have been left undisturbed by tilling practices. So it's also another connection sort of towards the regenerative agriculture movement to look at how could our foods be more nutrient dense by better farming practices. Don't want to go down a rabbit hole there, but the main reason for that would be the health of the soil and the tilth of the earth beyond our own personal health. But yeah, I think these are the three: ergosterol, ergothionine, and the alpha and beta glucans. And then, of course, as we differentiate into specific mushrooms, like reishi mushroom has triterpenoids. There are standards available for reishi that could be tested and validated across labs. So this is really where we would like to see industry collaboration on developing what are known as official methods of analysis in specific matrices, meaning if you test a substance in a, let's say, gummy or a chewable soft gel versus in a pill or a powder or a tablet, you have to have a different method to test for the activity in that actual matrix that you're looking for. So right now, we don't really have very many of those at all for mushrooms. We have good internal methods with companies, and companies can develop their own internal quality methods that, of course, look for heavy metals and micros and things like this to make sure that purity aspect is well-defined. But we're still needing to develop better identity standards and analytical testing methods for these secondary and primary metabolites of the mushrooms.
Who should be involved in that process? Are there efforts, you know, toward that end goal? You know, how do we get from here to there?
Yeah, so I think One of the main organizations we've really enjoyed working with at NAMEX over the years has been AOAC. And there's a program that they developed with the National Institutes of Health, actually, originally called the Botanical Ingredient and Dietary Supplement Integrity Program, or BIDSI. And there are a lot of internal jokes about how long that name is, an acronym, but BIDSI actually is looking for support. And there is a, we can provide information on who to contact at AOAC, but this is a group that specifically is looking from industry collaboration to develop these official methods of analysis. And right now the big one is to do that for gummies. There are some official methods of analysis to measure certain things like vitamin C, I believe, in a chewable soft gel or gummy. And now that we have had this recent news on melatonin gummies that's just come up, I think there might be more interest in that. And so, like in the mushroom space, for instance, we often get asked if you we at NAMEX could test for beta-glucans in a gummy to see how much is there. It's definitely available, but these are methods that need to be developed and able to be reproduced across all of the analytical labs participating. So yeah, official methods of analysis is one of the basic functions of AOAC and that Botanical Ingredient and Dietary Supplement Integrity Program.
Obviously, we talked about a bunch of different varieties of mushrooms, all which all have their own history of use and potential health benefits. Are there a couple that stand out to you right now that are really intriguing or that might have a long runway for innovation?
Yeah, well, lion's mane, certainly leading the pack right now. Heresium erinaceus. So Heresium or lion's mane, it's touted for cognitive benefits. A lot of research recently being done in vitro to look at specific activity with nerve growth factor development and so forth. You know, I think that's actually, if you look at sales data, that probably leads the charts. It's certainly one of the top inquiries. And then after that species, I'd say cordyceps, chaga, reishi. Turkey tail is coming into its own, and more people are realizing the immune benefits. You know, across the board, as you, I don't know if you like to eat mushrooms at all, Sean, but that's probably how at NAMEX we would suggest your primary way of consuming these should be to eat them. So eat shiitake mushrooms, you know, eat, there's really great that there's these mushrooms available now in the store. Oyster mushrooms are commonly available now in a lot of stores. And so that's the best way to get them. And then, you know, supplement when you need to, but I mean, they're foods, they're meant to be eaten as foods. And I think that's also, you mentioned earlier, that's why we're seeing them ending up in so many different delivery forms, you know, foods. There's an ice cream pop that has lion's mane in it. So the popularity of the mushrooms is kind of driven by the same things other dietary supplements are driven by. People are stressed out and they can't sleep and they're looking for things to be sharper on their feet during work. And so I think those health need states drive a lot of that activity. So lion's mane definitely is one that I think is going to garner a lot of attention. And it's really great to see the interest in the funds going into mycological research. You read about the thousands of species of plants and mushrooms that will probably go extinct before we even knew that they had wonderful benefits. So in terms of that aspect, it's great to have the interest in mushrooms.
What's the most fascinating mushroom you've encountered?
I mean, they're all pretty amazing to me. I mean, I gotta say, cordyceps seems like a really interesting one. It always has to me, just in terms of the life cycle of that actual organism and how it goes about its own life and needs an insect for a host. And I mean, there are hundreds of different things that would blow your mind about this whole world of fungus once you start looking at all of this that's happening beneath the ground and even above the ground when you see some of these beautiful Louis Schwartzberg's videos of mushrooms and the sporulation of them with backlighting, where you can see billions of spores coming out and mycelial networks that go on for miles underneath our feet in the forest. So I think all of these things are fascinating. So, but man, a type of fungus that seeks out a specific insect and can then parasitize it and infect it and grow a little string-like thing, that's pretty amazing to me, pretty amazing evolution of a species. So interestingly that, you know, video games and science fiction had picked up on that really handily.
The Last of Us, right?
Yeah, and The Last of Us, and which I had to find out about because somebody asking me like, oh, could that jump species? And I'm like, I don't know. You better ask someone with more scientific credentials than myself, but I don't think so. Anyway, I think, yeah, so you can see like in pop culture that they're also like very much on the scene. And again, so it's like this renaissance happening here with medicine. You have to realize like across the world, for many folks, it's their primary means of keeping themselves well. It's not something that they reach for as a last resort or because things have gotten so bad, now I need to take a supplement. It's kind of the plants are integrated into daily life by many people who keep themselves well that way. And I think those are good models for us to look at. And that's why we suggest eating mushrooms and supplementing when you need to. So,
yeah, it's really a lifestyle issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, Bill Chaffee, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.